this fucking guy.
We did it!
We did it. We're back.
Hi, friends. We're back.
Hey.
Hi, we're doing it. Hi, Caitlin.
Guess what?
What?
This is episode 10 of this fucking guy.
We're double digis.
Double digis.
Double digis, guys. We did it. Pew, pew, pew.
Pew, 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 pew.
We did it! That's Caitlin's favorite sound effect.
It is.
And I so love good. To do it for you because you get so much joy.
Well, you're so good at it.
I heard a comedian do it one time and I was like, oh, that's how you do it.
Will you do it again?
Bruh, bruh.
The fact that you make the, like, fake gun motion.
It's a whole thing. Yeah.
And, like, you're so white and tiny.
It's a whole, you have to do the gun hand with it, or it doesn't work as good.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
It doesn't do as good.
Amazing.
Sorry, listeners. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh my god, amazing.
So good. Truly. Welcome to double digis of this fucking guy.
Yes, welcome. We are here.
Yep, we are. And yes, we are.
So, let's see, show news. This is a call for everybody to go to patreon.com/thisfuckingguypod. It's all we want for Thanksgiving and Christmas. We need your support so that we can keep making this show for free because it costs us money.
Yeah, it does. And also, if you have jingle jangles you want to send us, songs,
yes,
fun things,
that is a fabulous idea.
Send
this
them to
fucking guy
this fucking iPod
at gmail.
At gmail.com.
Or DM us on Instagram.
Yeah, that too. Shoot us a SoundCloud link.
I would love like a 12 days of Christmas this fucking guy. Looking at you, Alex.
Oh, yes. I mean, if I'm going to have a wish list, that's item
that's
one.
That's it. That's all I want for Christmas, Hanukkah, and Kwanzaa.
Yes. All of the holidays, send us some jingle jangles. We will use them. Nate, hit them at about a good 30 seconds, though. We don't need, like, four-minute symphonies.
No. I don't need that.
No.
I would also like a Festivus present.
Oh, fuck yes.
And if you don't know what Festivus is, you should leave.
Yeah, get your life.
Because I don't want you here if you don't like Seinfeld. What else? Oh, we need people to go onto iTunes and appease our Apple overlords so that we can get noticed. Because if we get good ratings and we get good reviews, the more of that we get, the more Apple will take notice, and then we can get featured on, like, the new and noteworthy, and yes, then people will listen.
I mean, like, you don't even have to leave a review. Just boop us some stars.
Boop and, us like, some stars.
Just boop us some stars. That's, like, so low effort, guys. You got this. I believe in you.
It's free. It takes 5 seconds. The app is already there unless you're an Android user, in which case, I'm sorry, and I probably am not texting you.
Yeah, and I don't know how to help you. I'm sorry.
I can't. That sounds like a you problem.
Yeah. Although the camera on that Google Pixel is sick, so I get it.
Yeah, but I got them two cameras on my iPhone.
You do. You have like a fun little stovetop on the back of your phone.
Can cook it.
You got that double burner going.
I do. Isn't that sad that as an adult now you have like a favorite burner on your stove?
Oh, fuck yeah. It's front left.
Absolutely.
Who uses anything but front left?
Psychopaths?
Fucking psychos. If you use anything but front left, DM me and give me your reasoning.
Yeah, let's do a poll on Instagram.
Because if you're fucking, if you're using back right, you're fucking
Who
right.
Are you?
Who are you?
Also, who do you think you are?
Who do you think you are using back right?
I don't think I've ever in the history of owning an appliance used the back right.
It's the cleanest one. No one uses it. Why is it there?
I don't know. Even at my parents' house, when they have a really nice gas stove. Are you fucking kidding me?
This fucking guy.
This interruption brought to you by this fucking guy, Nicholas, my husband, whom I love. Goodbye.
He's just wandering on through, making a special appearance.
Goodbye. Stop winking at me.
Being creepy.
He just did an Alexis Rose, like, a wink.
I didn't, no. That's too much effort, that's too much facial movement for a wink. Go away.
Is your husband there now?
Jesus Christ. It's just husband appearance hour. My husband just opened the door to the office where I'm recording because he just got out of the bath, not a shower, bath.
Kyle loves a good bath. Does he have his dick out?
Yep, just waving his dick at me.
A little helicopter?
Like, you know, on a Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Yep, that's what I'm getting right now. Yep. Yep, I'm getting the I got a surprise for you. Thigh slaps.
Oh, yeah. It's the worst.
Oh, it's the worst in the sound. Oh. Oh, man. Wow.
Speaking of sex.
Yeah.
So, I just want to give a quick shout out. I know I'm late to the party. I'm really late to the party because they're in, like, season 5 in an HBO special and they have a book out. But I started listening to My Dad Wrote a Porno, and it is truly the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
I'm on this train.
It is so funny. If you've never listened, it's about this guy. There are three hosts, they're all British, so everything sounds amazing.
Oh, I'm on board just with that information.
Yes, and they're like so British. And this guy's dad wrote not one erotic literature novel, several. It's a series. He wrote a series.
Wait, and they read it. Real?
Correct. They read a chapter a week. And then they talk about it, and then, so this guy is reading these words that came out of his father's brain, this erotic literature that is so bad, and that makes no sense.
That's like Dennis from It's Always Sunny with his erotic memoirs.
It is, oh my god, it's so good. And I almost crashed my car because I was laughing so hard. Like, it is bringing me so much joy, and I've had a rough couple weeks, and it's just, it's everything. So that's just a quick little porno shout out.
So this is a new segment called This Fucking Guy Recos.
Yes.
Fucking Guy Recos. Yeah. My reco? I'm gonna do a quickie.
Ooh.
The Red Rising series, which was brought into my life by my wonderful podcast co-host.
You're welcome.
This book series will absorb your life.
It is everything.
It's so wonderful. It's gonna fuck your shit up. Just
yeah. If you like, faith, if you like drama, action,
taking down the man,
taking down the patriarchy.
But you got to infiltrate the man to take down the man
from the inside. Ugh.
These books literally hurt me, but I still love them so much.
They are so good. So that's the Red Rising series by Pierce Brown. There are currently 5 books out. Mm. So read that and then let us know what you think.
Yeah. DM us all your thoughts because I got a lot.
Yeah, Carmen's like in the thick of the field of that right now.
Yeah, I just constantly text Caitlin when big reveals happen in all caps.
I'm like, I know, I'm sorry, I couldn't tell you.
I know, and then you're just constantly apologizing and telling me it's going to get worse. So it's a real fun slog.
That's it. Just like this podcast, it only gets, it's only downhill from here.
Yeah, exactly. We're never going to get any better. I mean, the audio quality may get better, but that's about it.
It might. We'll probably still fuck it up. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. It's very on brand.
It's Alex's fault.
It is Alex's fault because we can't pay him to come be our producer.
Because we don't have any money because you fuckers won't give us money on Patreon.
I don't have any money, Lillian. Also, I just really quickly need to tell you, Caitlin, that when you told me the other day that you were... I told you that you were, like, unbreakable like Kimmy Schmidt, and you told me I was your Tiny Titus. It made my life.
You are my Tiny Titus.
It made my life. I truly feel that I have the soul of a very larger-than-life gay man, so that made my life.
It's true, and I meant every word. So do you want to tell me a story?
I do want to tell you a story. I'm going to tell you a story about a secret society.
Fuck yes, I love secret societies. Is it the Illuminati?
This one's right up your alley. And it's British.
I never thought you would give me such a gift.
I know, I really tried to find something that was, like, borderline creepy for you, so I really pushed myself this week.
This is why you're my best friend.
Oh, I love you so much.
I love you so much.
I am going to tell you the story of the life of Sir Francis Dashwood.
Ooh, Dashwood, how dashing.
I know, good old Sir Francis Dashwood. So he was the eldest and only son of Sir Francis Dashwood, who we will from now on call Daddy Sir Francis, because our Sir Francis is named after Daddy. So we need to delineate.
Daddy. So I hate it.
I know, but I just need to delineate between Daddy and BB for just a minute.
Okay.
Okay, so we've got Daddy Sir Francis Dashwood and his second wife, Lady Mary Thane. And he was born in December of 1708. December babies, woo-hoo! So, Daddy Sir Francis was a wealthy businessman who had built his family fortune with dealings with the Ottoman Empire, and he was, like, big into trading in Turkey and China. And then when little Francis, little baby Francis, was 2 years old, his mommy, Lady Mary, died, and Daddy Sir Francis promptly remarried, because that's how they did shit back then. So, not a whole lot is known about BB Sir Francis's early life, but we do know that he was educated at Eton College, because, you know, British royalty, you know, had so many monies. So, he went to Eton College, and his dad died when he was 15 in November 1724. And so then he inherited Daddy's title, Daddy's estate, Daddy's fortune, got all the monies, just bank, straight bank.
So much Daddy.
Okay, we're done with that part, though. We're done with Daddy. Daddy's dead. He's done.
Daddy's dead.
Daddy's done. Yeah, no. Gross.
Sorry, I'm upset.
So 2 years after his dad dies in 1926, Francis, like many young aristocrats, kids, went on a grand tour of Europe. And while he was there, he gained he started gaining some notoriety. So he was known as a bit of a prankster.
Classic.
And while he was in Russia, he impersonated the King of Sweden. So he dressed up as the King of Sweden, which at the time was one of Russia's greatest enemies, and amazing. Also tried to seduce the Tsarina, Anna.
Holy shit.
So he was a bit of a rapscallion. And for those keeping track, he was only like 17. Some say that he succeeded in getting with Tsarina Anna, but we don't know. Everybody was fucking back then, so it's highly likely.
Everyone was just...
Ooh, everybody's just getting it in. Everybody. So, on his grand tour of Europe, you know, they visited, like, all the royal courts, and they went to art galleries and museums and got all that culture. But this motherfucker not only went and got that culture, he was kicking it in ale houses and going to bordellos and just fucking run ragged. So little BB Francis was just, like, out there living his best life. He was like, I'm English. I'm rich as fuck. I'm out here in Europe. I'm gonna do my dizzle.
I'm a white dude. I'm killing it.
Just murdering it in the mid-1700s as a rich white dude. So a few years later, he sets out on another tour, this time of Italy. And at the time, Italy was like real big into the occult. Like, just getting real hot into the occult.
Then my people.
Just getting real into some weird dark shit. And Sir Francis was like, yes, I am into this. Wanted to know all about it. But his tutor, who was with him on his grand tour, was like a very stern Catholic man and insisted on taking him to the Sistine Chapel to try and instill some respect for Christianity.
We know how that forced religion goes.
Yeah, people forcefully taken to church usually don't react very well.
They don't love it.
Oh, yeah. So Sir BB Francis is no different. So he made a mockery of the service, which was on Good Friday.
By, holy fuck.
Yeah, so there was a candlelit service for Good Friday. And what he did was wore like this giant overcoat and packed a horse whip inside of it, so no, that when they blew out all the candles to start the service, because it's supposed to be in like almost a light, he ran down the aisles cracking the whip and scaring the shit out of everyone in the chapel, and they started screaming the devil in Italian because they thought the devil was in attendance. Il Diavolo? Is that right? Il Diavolo?
Yeah. Sure. Oh my god, that's amazing.
Yeah. So he just, and then bounces. Like, scares the shit out of everyone, causes a scene, bounces. Love it.
Ooh.
Yeah. So Sir BB Francis is really just living it up. So he's kind of like playing with atheism too a little bit. Like, he doesn't really like organized religion. He's kind of like, this is bullshit, whatever.
What was that word you just said?
I'm gonna skim over it.
Religion.
Yes, that one. Yes, we're gonna scoot right past that. So he returns from his travels of Italy and is now starting on his restoration of the family's estate, and he hires, in true Sir BB Francis fashion, hires a Milanese painter to work on the house, and commissions these vast, enormous pieces painted on the ceiling, based on the myths of Bacchus.
Yes, and Bacchus is like my favorite god.
I mean, just, he's the god of fucking revelry and wine. He's a good time.
Bacchus and the magician is everything.
He's great. He's just like a candy raver. I love it.
Yes.
It's great. It's like the best idea ever. So good. So yeah, Sir Francis is like making it rain to paint these crazy ass murals of, like, Bacchus on his ceilings of his crazy family's
estate. Wine everywhere. Oh, hits out.
Just so many wines and so many, like, cherubs.
Just, like one boob out.
Yeah, you know there was just, like, a boob hanging out in one of those. Just lots of revelry and fun times.
Naked babies.
Oh, yeah. So, a couple years after this, it's 19, or not 19, because it's not the 1900s. It's 1732, and Francis forms his first secret society.
Yes.
That's called the Society of Dilettanti, and it was for rich people who were, like, really into classical art, but they would dress up in, like, super elaborate costumes and perform mock religious rituals.
Stop it.
Yes. So
I love this man.
Yeah, so it's basically for, like, rich British people who've been to Italy to come and talk about classical art, in quotations. Well, really, they were just drinking and fucking and probably having a good time.
Used to party.
Yeah, just, like, eating amazing feasts.
It's like in college when you have a theme party for literally no reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like, we just want to get together and eat a bunch of shit and drink and,
Animal House. Somebody.
It's all good. Let's call it what it is. So the Society of the Dilettanti kind of takes off. It's going hard. And a few years later, in 1739, Sir Francis busts out a second visit to Italy, where he meets our favorite character from Outlander, the bonnie Prince Charles Stuart.
Yes!
In trial.
I love bonnie Prince Charles. Mock me, Jamie.
Oh. So, for those who do not watch Outlander,
you should.
Get on it. But the bonnie Prince Charles Stuart was the grandson of King James, who was forced to abandon the English throne earlier, and, so our sweet Sir Francis, was not real taken with the bonnie Prince Charles.
Most people, I feel like, weren't.
I know.
He was a very strange character.
He's a strange man. But Francis wrote of meeting the bonnie Prince Charles, quote, "I am at one with this gallant prince. He has all of the gifts of a true leader, and above all, he is honest. But I detest most heartily the fripperies of Rome which emanate from his entourage."
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So he was not down with all the Roman influence on Prince Charles, because he had been in exile and, like, basically raised very Italian.
Wow.
Yeah, real interesting. So, like I said, dilettante society, going hard. But by 1743, it was kind of falling out of favor. And there's a famous British writer who was, like, pretty high up in society at the time. His name was Horace Walpole. And he said about the Dilettanti Society that it was, this is so savage, "a club for which the nominal qualification is having been to Italy, and the real one being drunk."
Ah!
Savage. I think I have a few more quotes from Henry Walpole, because he was, like, kicking it with this crew. He's pretty great.
That's amazing.
So, huh?
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah, he's great. So during this time too, BB Sir Francis was elected to Parliament as an MP, and he, like, you know, contrary to some other, like, rich white dudes, he actually tried to do a good job.
Oh, unlike my guy last week, who was like, "I'm gonna build some tunnels because I don't want to go to Parliament."
No, he did not build tunnels. He actually, like, tried to improve roads and, like, build some bridges and shit.
Imagine
and,
like, that.
Improve cities. So he actually, like, tried to do some shit. But, in 1744, he and fellow Dilettanti Society member, the Earl of Sandwich, best name ever.
Earl of Sandwich is so good.
So good. They founded a second society, a secret society, called the Divan Club, for those who had visited the Ottoman Empire, but it didn't really last real long. I think it was like 2 years, and then they abandoned that. Mm. So, the next year, 1745, you know, Sir Francis is living his life. He's got lots of ladies. He's got holes in area codes, in all the area codes. She's going to bordellos. He doesn't give a fuck. He ends up marrying Sarah Ellis, a very rich widow. Oh, yes, here's another Horace Walpole quote. Ugh, savage. So Sarah Ellis was described by Horace Walpole as being, quote, a poor, forlorn Presbyterian prude. Horace Walpole is savage. I love that.
That is amazing.
So, like, everybody had a lot of questions about why he married this woman. Like, was it to get her money or whatever? But it never happened because they never had an heir. And, like, they seemed to genuinely like each other. Huh. But it did not stop him from fucking around. He was dedicated to fucking around.
Classic. Old white dude.
Classic. Now, here's where shit gets good. It's 1751. Sir B.B. Francis. Taking it in Parliament, doing Parliament stuff. He's meeting people. He's up there. He's an aristocrat.
Whatever they do.
He's got all the money. What does a rich aristocrat have to do with their time? He founds a third secret society.
How do you keep up with your schedule at that point?
I don't know. Secretaries?
They didn't have, like, Google Calendar.
They didn't. I think that they probably were just, like, they, you know, they rake up and they're rich and they do like some Parliament stuff for a couple of hours and then there's like the rest of the day.
I don't even know what they do.
That's my assumption. Is they're just like, oh, I'm going to go to Parliament. Okay, we have 5 roads. Maybe we should have a 6th. Cool, adjourn. Like, and then that's it.
And that's secret society time.
And then it's like, you've got the fucking, you've got 11, you know, to the rest of the day to really figure some shit out.
Amazing.
So he starts another society called the Order of the Friars of St. Francis of Wycombe, because that's where his family's estate was.
Too many words.
But it, so many words. So it later becomes known as the Hellfire Club.
Ooh.
So they originally had the meetings at Francis's estate, but you know, you're trying to be a respectable member of a British society. Maybe your estate's not the greatest location for like wild, crazy, secret society festivities.
Uh-huh.
Probably not a great idea. But he, his friend was this painter named Francis Duffield, and Francis's family had inherited this disused 12th century monastery called Medmenham, Jesus Christ.
Oh boy.
Medmenham Abbey. Not Madmen.
Medmenham. Like Medman, like weed, like Medman.
Yes.
Medmenham Abbey.
Yes. Medmenham Abbey.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a tough one. So Francis decides to lease the land from him, renovate the property, and at the end of the renovation has the words, the Latin motto of his society inscribed over the door, which is, fais ce que voudrais, meaning do what thou wilt. So
I love
the society, yes. So the society started with these like 13 original members. That was why they were the friars, because they were like apostles and Saint Francis.
So they were against organized religion, but then they're like, we're gonna institute some organized religion type. Titles.
Yeah, but it was like to make
as a
fun
joke.
Of it. So Francis was like their head.
Okay.
And he would act as the high priest and used a communion cup to pour out libations to the deities that they worshipped, which were mostly Bacchus and Venus.
Oh, amazing. Amazing.
So some fun quick facts about the Hellfire Society. So ladies were allowed to be members, which is like super progressive for the time.
Iconic.
And it was rumored that the noble ladies that attended the Hellfire Society came in disguise to conduct secret affairs.
Sorry, Gigi just licked the microphone.
Oh, cool.
That's amazing.
She just wanted to be involved.
Yeah.
So they had this huge library built into the monastery, or should I say Sir Francis had this huge library built into the monastery, which was filled with books and most of them were of a pornographic nature, including the first English edition of the Kama Sutra. That was a gift to him.
The gift, Todd.
Ladies of the night, sex workers and courtesans were commonly brought from London to the Abbey and were dressed as nuns.
Oh.
So like naughty nuns.
Ooh, scandalous.
So the good old...
It's like a weird sex cult.
Yeah, basically, they just wanted to drink and fuck, like, and in private. Oh, so, and a lot of leading, like, politicians from, because, parliament, and aristocrats were, always a part of the goings-on at the Hellfire Club. And so, because of that, because there were so many, like, politicians and lawmakers and stuff, there was always people, like, swapping favors and shit. And this led to, a lot happening with the Hellfire Society members in the election of 1762, because the prime minister that was elected that year invited, which is such a weird word to say, invited Sir Francis to the be the chancellor of the Exchequer, which is essentially like their head of treasury. Now, okay. Sir Francis was not a man who was, like, fond of numbers.
Of
He's been an aristocrat all of his life.
He just wants to fuck and drink.
Yeah. So, right off the bat, Sir Francis, to raise money, puts a tax on cider for, like, people who make it and if you drink it. And so, like, the public was like, fuck no, bitch. And there was such an outcry that he was forced to resign the following year. He was in office for 1 year.
Wow.
But, so, the office that he got in the parliament, right?
Sure.
Sure.
We're
okay.
Not British.
We're not British. We don't know.
If you're British, so I'm sorry, but also I don't care.
Yeah, we're so sorry. We don't understand your political system. But you probably don't get ours anyway, re-elected.
We don't either.
We don't either.
Everything's so fine. We're fine.
We're fine. It's not a dumpster fire. good times. So, the cabinet position that Sir Francis got, this other dude who was a member of the Hellfire Society named John Wilkes, was like, oh, no, that was supposed to be my cabinet position.
Excuse me.
He got real mad. Yeah, excuse me, I would like to be the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Sure.
I really hope I'm saying that right, but I also don't care about that.
It's fine.
So he was like, some schisms started to form in the society because he felt that he had been snubbed for the position that now Sir Francis held.
As someone who is in a sorority, you do not want schisms in a secret society.
No.
So, like, you mean.
Some factions started to form. But, you know, it's like old-timey times, and they're, like, old white dudes. You know, they're, like, in their 50s by now. Mm-hmm. So, like, they talk shit in old-timey ways. They, wrote papers and published them and, like, talked shit.
Set some pamphlets out.
Yeah. Made some pamphlets.
Threw a glove at someone.
Yeah, just like, you know, old-timey talking shit. They didn't have Twitter.
No. Yeah,
so they talk shit also anyways. Yeah. So they were just like, here's a pamphlet. I'm mad.
And you're like, wow, you spent a lot of money to print that.
Yeah, printing was not fucking cheap, y'all. But it's been some money to talk shit. Takes me 30 seconds and just like beep, beep, boop, boop, and I'll
be it in the interweb.
You beep, beep, boop it, you push send, and then you regret it later and you delete it. Everything's fine. There's no paper trail.
Yeah.
So anyway, so they're talking shit in old-timey ways. And then a couple of years later in 1766, good old Sir Francis even though he had to leave his post as the head of treasury, is now appointed as a postmaster general, because they're like, you can't really fuck shit up there. Go there.
Go do the mail.
Yeah. What? So, and he actually, like, did some good shit.
Oh.
While he was a postmaster general, he actually, like, did a good job. But by I don't think it's very hard, but he, like, introduced the penny stamp, and it was, like, real popular. And he, like, helped Ireland kind of establish their postal system. So he, like, actually did some good shit.
Okay.
But, like, with all the political scandals about the society, and then, like, everybody's names getting dragged through the mud, like, the society had really started to fade at this point. So Sarah Ellis passes away a couple years later in 1769, and so Sir Francis, like, continues with, like, developing the estates. He's got shit else to do, so he adds a whole new West Wing, because
why not?
My privilege. And then Ben Franklin comes and visit the newly added West Wing in 1773, and he was rumored to be a distinguished guest at the Hellfire Club.
Scandal. Oh my god. Also the fact that those two people, I know Benjamin Franklin was alive at that time, but the fact that, like, you know what I mean? It's difficult to think about.
Worlds colliding.
Just, wow.
Amazing. So, good old Sir Francis is, like, in his 60s now, and he's, like, retired, and he's respectable. But he wasn't about to give up his old ways.
Of course not.
Sir Francis is dedicated to fucking around. This motherfucker has a mistress that gives birth to a daughter in 1774, and for those not great at math like me, means that he was 66, baby.
That's really gross.
Just old balls.
That is really gross.
Straight up old balls. Yeah.
And he became daddy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, a few years later, 1781, he's, like, getting ready he's, like, planning another great tour of Italy, but his health is kind of declining, and so he passed away on December 11th of 1781, but he had revised his will just before his death to leave everything to his daughter and his
sister. Aww. Well, that's nice.
Francis Dunn did some good.
He was a crazy dude, but at least that was nice.
He was crazy, but he, like, tried.
Yeah.
Yeah, aww. Here's the moral of the story. White dudes, just try.
It's not that hard.
That's where the bar is.
This is proof you can have your weird secret societies provided consensual and do good in the world.
Yeah, you can have both.
You don't have to have a weird, like, murdery cult.
No, they never murdered anybody. They just wanted to get together and fucking drink.
You can drink and have fun.
Yeah, it's fine.
We do it.
But just outside, in regular life,
be a normal person.
Try to be a decent human.
Try to just do one thing that is good.
Yeah. It's not hard.
Let that person.
So that's your Francis Dashwood.
That's amazing. His name is so posh.
It is, isn't it? And, like, he has lots of titles, too, and I wasn't even going to try and butcher
those. No, that's, like, Khaleesi.
Like, so many titles.
Situation.
He was, like, a baronet. I don't even know what that means.
Isn't that, like, a thing at the end of a gun where you stab somebody? That's a bayonet.
That's a bayonet. S close, though. I see where your mind is going.
I just feel like it's the same.
Yeah, it's basically the same. He had so many titles, and I was like, he's just Sir Francis. It's just chilling.
Why do you need that many names?
He had so many names and so many monies. I was like, we get it.
Can we just start adding titles to our names?
I would, like, Khaleesi style?
Yeah.
I would like that.
What's stopping us?
Snuggler of puppies.
Yeah.
writer of puns.
Drinker of wine.
Oh, yes, very much so, yes. Taker of antidepressants.
Yes. Enjoyer of Klonopin.
Yes. Big fan. Big fan.
Fan of blankets.
Yes. Yes. Oh.
Binger of Netflix. I mean, we could go on.
Oh. Yes, we could do this. We just need some real official titles.
I love this. We should post what our ultimate titles would be on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Dig it.
We probably won't do it because.
We won't. What? We have lives.
Whatever.
And Netflix. You know. And Disney Plus just came out.
Oh my god.
We got a lot of content.
Okay, can we talk about Disney Plus for a second? Because today, I got news of, obviously we're doing a Lizzie McGuire reboot with the original cast. And Gordo has officially joined the cast, and it looks amazing.
I did see that on Instagram today. My little Disney Channel heart happy.
Having so much nostalgia. Ugh. It's going to be so good.
It is. And then when that NBC Peacock app drops, girl. Oh, then we're going to get that AP Bio season we'll be waiting on. God damn.
AP Bio is so good.
It's so good. And I'm like I told you the other day when we were watching Sunny, I was like, Glenn Howerton is so goddamn hot.
What is it about? Is he attractive, or is it because he plays someone who you know is bad for you?
I don't know how to separate those things. Very honestly, I don't know how to separate those
things. Is it a little both? I don't know. It's unclear.
It's little column A, little column B. It, you know,
could be a lot of the strong jawline.
It is a very strong jawline. Also, great hair.
Fantastic hair. Looks fantastic. Amazing in sweatpants.
He does look very good in sweatpants. That's a great point. You know who else looks great in just sweatpants? Justin Theroux, baby. Leftover season one, y'all.
Okay, so I never watched The Leftovers. Mostly,
you just need to watch that scene where he's running in sweatpants. That's all you need.
Mostly because Judd kept talking about The Leftovers, and I was like, okay, I get it. You really like this show, but, like, shut the fuck up. He's like, this is the best show I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, is that so?
It's very depressing. I only watch season one.
It just doesn't do it for me. But Justin Theroux, very hot.
Woo! Mm. Justin Theroux running.
In sweatpants.
There's a lot of movement. It's a lot of movement. That's all I'm going to say. I mean, you can ask the Google machine about it. It's fantastic. Big fan of Justin Theroux's sweatpants work. Are you going to tell me a story?
I'm going to tell you a story. Okay, so I do have to say that there is something that slightly connects our stories because you mentioned Russia and pretending to be like a Russian.
He dressed up as the King of Sweden.
Yes. Okay. So scamming. So today now. I know that we have a historical podcast, Carmen. However,
yes,
I am going to tell you about a scammer in present day who rivals that of Princess Caribou from episode 4.
Yes, I'm fully in.
I am taking you down the twisty road of present day fake German heiress Anna Delvey, who is currently in prison for her scamming scam.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Let's do this.
This shit is bonkers. So, before we get into it, I'm going to tell you I got most of my information from a book called My Friend Anna by Rachel Deloach Williams, who we'll talk more about, the New York Times, CBS News, and then this amazing podcast called Damn Goddess by Lacey Mosley. It's unbelievable. She covers all kinds of scammers with guests. It's amazing. So, Anna was born in Russia on January 23rd, 1991, as Anna Vadmanova Sorokina. Probably didn't pronounce it right. I'm not Russian. I am sorry.
I'm just picturing Villanelle.
Sure. Yeah. Kind of. Just as fabulous. Her dad was a truck driver, and her mom owned a convenience store before quitting her job to be a stay-at-home mom. And then when Anna was 16, the family moved to Cologne, Germany, and she was just described as, like, really quiet, and, like, nobody really knew a lot about her. She was just very reserved. She graduated high school in 2011, and then she moved to London to attend Central St. Martin's Art School, but she never finished art school. She then goes back to Germany, and then she was there for, like, a short time, and then she moved to Paris for an internship at a fashion magazine called Purple, which I've literally never heard of.
That seems suspicious.
Right? It exists. It's just like, I don't know.
Okay.
And this is where she assumed the identity of Anna Delvey. So, then, in 2013, as all fake heiresses do, she moved to New York City.
Yes.
She made friends by, I'm sure she made friends for other reasons except for saying this, but she told all of her friends that she had a 60 million euro trust fund that took care of her lavish lifestyle. So she stayed in these fancy hotels and went to all these expensive dinners at, like, James Beard award-winning restaurants, and she was, like, going to the spa every other day, getting, like, $400 lash extensions, like, getting her hair done at Sally Hershberger, like, just, like, ridiculous.
How?
We'll get to that. So, she also told people that she was working on creating an art foundation that, quote, was a dynamic visual art center dedicated on contemporary art. And
sure, that's just enough vague words in a sentence.
Yes, and, like, repeating art makes it more legit.
It makes it more arty.
Yeah, very artful.
So full of art.
So she said that the family trust would fund her ability to lease the historic Church Missions House on Park Avenue in New York City. Yes. Yeah. Now, Park Avenue is so fucking expensive.
It's, like, literally by the park. It's the most expensive.
It is, like, any time, when I lived in New York, when I walked down Park Avenue, I just, like, could feel the pour coming off of me.
You're like, and they're gonna sweep me off the sidewalks.
Yeah, and I could just see every person that walked by, I could just feel the judgment. Just ridiculous. So, she had plans to lease this historic house and turn it into a studio, an art gallery, a nightclub, etc., etc. It also would have, like, a members-only section.
Sure. Sure, that's a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. This is her alleged plan. So, Anna had a little habit of forgetting her wallet. But she was, like, a cool heiress, so it was, like, no big deal. Or she would, like, be out somewhere and her card would get declined, but, like, it was a bank issue with, like, the overseas bank in Russia, and, like, I'll call them in the morning, and, like, oh my god, just, like, put $500 on your MX, like, it's fine, I'll pay you back.
Wow.
So, now we're gonna get into the meat of this story, where, we're getting a little into the Rachel De La Roche Williams Anna Delvey friendship. So, Rachel says she met Anna in 2016. She was out with some of her fashion editor friends. At the time, Rachel worked for Vanity Fair. As a former editor, I used to go to things like this where I would be out and there would be like people you would see at events and like pressers and like different PR things. Like there was like definitely a circle of these kinds of people. So I guess Anna somehow got into this group because she had worked at Purple in Paris, which, whatever.
Sure.
She had an editorial in. So she would like talk about her lavish lifestyle and how she was opening this art foundation, and people just like thought she was generally fascinating, including Rachel. So she said that, you know, she ran into Anna every now and then, like when she was in town, and she was like very mysterious and cool, but she also was very charming, which like, again, that's like classic sociopathic of, like, very vague, but, like, charming and able to kind of, like, convince you to do shit. They were really quick friends, and Anna was staying at 11 Howard, a very swanky hotel in Soho that was, like, Scandinavian in design, and it was, like, super modern and, like, cool. And she was, like, living out of hotels, even though she was staying in the U.S. for, like, long periods of time. It's, like, you could have, like, rented an apartment. Or something. You know, it was just, like, weird. Things didn't add up, but nobody paid attention. So, at the beginning of Anna and Rachel's friendship, Anna was, like, only in town every now and then, and, like, they would hang out every few weeks. And then Anna went back to Germany before her visa expired, and then suddenly she, like, showed back up, and she was talking to Rachel, and she was like, I have to go back to Germany again to situate something with my visa to reset it, and but like, oh, let's go on vacation first, like before we like we should just like take a vacation and then like we'll come back and get everything sorted. And in Rachel's mind, she's like, oh yeah, like I can go to the beach or something, whatever. Like she was on an editor salary, like she wasn't making a ton of money. And Anna's like, how about we go to Marrakesh?
Yeah, that's lofty.
Mm-hmm. And she was like, no, 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 but like I'll pay for it. It's fine. Like, no big deal. So Anna books a $7,000 a night private villa at La Mumia.
Yes. Okay. That's a word. Sure.
It's a 5-star luxury resort in Morocco. So she books the hotel and then she's like trying to book the flights, but there was like an issue with Anna's credit cards because of the banks in Russia or whatever.
Yeah, and you have so time zones.
Yeah, yeah, the zones of time. Mm-hmm. So she
it's nighttime over there.
Yeah, yeah, they're sleeping, they drink vodka, whatever. So she was like, Rachel, put it on your Amex, I'll reimburse you. And Rachel was like, a little bit of a red flag, but, like, okay, like, whatever, like, she'll pay me back. Like, she's, like, she had taken Rachel out to, like, these expensive dinners and, like, hadn't really, like, there were only a few instances prior where Anna had, like, asked Rachel to cover, like, small things, but, like, in Rachel's mind, she was, like, this heiress and she was good for the money and, like, there are issues with, like, the banks and, like, money coming from Russia because, like, whatever.
Exchange rates, you know.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and, like, national security. So, so, the trip is booked. They arrive in Morocco, and they're not alone. They're with Anna's personal trainer and then one of Anna's friends who is a photographer, and they embark on this exotic Moroccan adventure. They go shopping at the market, and Rachel says in her book that she wanted Anna, or that Anna wanted to have these special dresses made, and she offered to buy one for Rachel, and then she, like, goes to pay for it, and her card got declined. So she, like, did the usual, oh my god, the banks must have flagged me, I don't think I mentioned I was traveling, like, Rachel, can you put on your MX, like, I'll pay you back. And then it happened at dinner. And then they get back to the hotel, and there was an employee from the hotel that was like, Anna, like, Miss Delby, we need to speak with you immediately. They're, like, this is a problem. So when Anna returns to the room, Rachel was like, is everything okay? And Anna was just like, oh, no, it's just, like, so annoying, like, the things, like, and they're closed and, like, I'll call them again in the morning. Like, everything's just, like, getting declined because that's how things work.
Yeah, sure. Because people don't like to get paid.
Right. So then the next day, the concierge found Rachel and asked where Anna was, and they were like, we need to talk with her, like, immediately, and they, like, kept trying to find her. And then at this point, the trainer, the personal trainer, got really sick and, like, was violently ill and, like, needed to get home. So Rachel booked, using the trainer's credit card, booked a flight for the trainer to get home and called the concierge to get a car to take her back to New York. And the car just, like, wasn't coming. And it turns out that the hotel thought all four of them were trying to, like, skip out on the hotel bill. And Rachel was like, no, like, this girl's, like, really fucking sick. Like, she's, like, I'm sending her home. Like, I'm staying. Like, I will help you figure this out. So the villa then sends two bodyguards to go and watch over Anna while she's making calls.
Oh, my God.
And it's, like, very intense. I'm like, please, everybody, go read the book, My Friend Anna. It's amazing. The way that Rachel describes everything, it's just, like, holy shit. If I were in this situation, I would have already thrown up, like, 5 times. Like, it's so stressful. And, like, Anna is just like, oh, like, like, it's no big deal, like, whatever. And Rachel's like, what the fuck is going on? So the hotel was like, no, we just need an active card to, like, put the hold on the hotel room because, like, that's how hotels work. Like, you get charged, and then, like, and if you don't have any incidentals or anything like that, like, and you can charge it to a different card when you check out, but, like, that's what they do.
Yeah.
So Anna's like, Rachel, like, just put it on your Amex, and I'll add it to my tab, and, like, I'll pay you back, like, once we get the bank stuff sorted out. So I'm going to read you what Rachel writes in My Friend Anna.
Oh, my God. I can't imagine how much money this is at this point.
I left Marrakesh early the next day before Anna and the videographer. As I arrived at my destination, I received a text from Anna promising that she'd forward a wire confirmation as soon as possible. She'd checked out of La Mamounia. Sorry. And taken a car to Richard Branson's Casbah Tamadot, the destination hotel in the foothills of Morocco's High Atlas Mountains. I'll wire you $70,000, that way everything's covered, she said. I suddenly understood that she intended to leave the hotel charges on my account to add that amount to the total she'd owed me from the expenses outside the hotel. The balance was more money than I net annually. It suddenly felt like a foregone conclusion. I know. Also, amazing that she even had that high of a limit to put stuff on her credit card. I don't know what that's like.
No. Chase Bank would have been like, that's so funny. It's so funny.
All my cards are like, we'll raise your limit $100.
That's so cute that you think you have money. Oh, that's so funny.
Oh, you're so, like, stupid.
How was she, like, bankrolling her lifestyle?
Yeah. So, because she's crazy. So, upon returning from Morocco, obviously, the wire transfer never came. Rachel had to track down Anna at her new hotel room at the Beekman, and Anna, like, again, had all these excuses. She said the check would be dropped off the next day. It never was. And so there were, like, a few more of these cat and mouse instances, and then Rachel was like, I'm going to the police. And they did nothing.
Yeah.
Of course. So then she goes to civil court to file a suit against Anna, and they also did not help. But then, suddenly, a story breaks in the New York Post that Anna skipped out on her stay at the Beekman and never paid them. They were keeping her stuff and charging her with several misdemeanors. Anna then sought out Rachel and the personal trainer Comfort, and she's like sobbing at the headlines, and she's like distraught. And Rachel like read the stories and then kind of just like put everything together, and she was like, oh my god, like I got fucking scammed. So Rachel's like, all this is bullshit. So she emails the New York County District Attorney's Office.
Ooh, damn!
Sends them a link to the article and says, I think this girl's a con artist. And they called her and they're like, yeah, we know. So, fast forward to December 18th, 2018. Anna rejects a plea deal in court.
The case, shit.
Yeah, she's like, no, didn't do it. The case goes to trial March 20th, 2019 of this fucking year. Rachel, who wrote the book, testified in court saying, this is the most traumatic thing I've ever been through. I wish I had never met Anna. If I could have gone back in time to not be where I am today, I would. I wouldn't wish this on anybody. Now, Anna's defense attorney, Todd Spodek, said Anna was, quote, just buying time, and that she was always going to pay everything back.
Uh-huh.
He claimed that she was just an overeager entrepreneur and compared her to Frank Sinatra, saying they both created their own opportunities and that there's a little bit of Anna in all of us. This is the life she chose to live.
Oh! Okay. Cool. That is a very unique perspective.
A great defense, really.
Wow.
Yep. So, throughout the trial, it comes out that not only had Anna scammed Rachel, she had skipped out on her bill at the Beekman. She had skipped out on all these other bills. There were, like, so many charges against her. It came out that Anna had convinced one bank to loan her $100,000, even though she had no cash flow, no proof of income. She went through, like, half of the money in about a month. She chartered a plane for $35,000 and never paid the bill. During the trial, Anna was seen smiling, laughing, and people thought she was, like, having the time of her life. There was even, she had hired a celebrity stylist to dress her for court. And then there was, like, an Instagram of her, like, courtroom look.
Did these people not get the memo of what the trial was about before they offered their services?
I mean, they definitely didn't get paid, that's for sure. I don't know what, like, I mean, they're not going to get any money. So, Anna was found guilty of second-degree larceny and one count of first-degree attempted grand larceny on April 25th, 2019. She was not found guilty for an attempted $22 million loan that she tried to get. And, and she was not charged for the theft of the Morocco trip against Rachel. However, she was sentenced on May 9th, 2019 to 4 to 12 years in state prison.
Oh, no.
She was fined $24,000 and then also ordered to pay $200,000 in restitution. She is incarcerated at Bedford Hills Correctional in New York, and she's repeatedly been disciplined for breaking the rules. After she gets out, she will likely be deported back to Germany. And she said to the New York Times in a jailhouse interview, I'd be lying to you and everyone else, and to myself, if I said I was sorry for anything, and that she would do it again.
Well, you know, at least she's honest.
She's somewhat honest. And so you can get Rachel De La Roche Williams' book, My Friend Anna, out now. And Shonda fucking Rhimes is making a Netflix series about this.
Yes.
And it is going to be amazing.
Yes.
I hope Rachel makes so much money.
Me too. I hope she gets so many monies from this. So how does one go about convincing people that you're an heiress?
I guess just confidence and, like, being a sociopath.
Yeah, that's true.
I kind of liken it to, like, the confidence you have when you use a fake ID.
Oh.
But just, like, on a very large scale.
It just seems like so many things to keep up with.
So many things to keep up with. And, like, I mean, this girl was committed to her scam.
Yeah.
She wasn't just scamming, like, people she was friends with. And, like, it's one thing to, like, I don't know, have somebody cover dinner and, like, you forget to pay them back one time. But, like, these were, like, hundreds of dollar dinners, trips, like, hotels. I think it was something she racked up, like, over $300,000 worth of.
Holy shit.
Like, over, like, the course of a year.
Damn. That's solid work. And she got a bank to give her a loan?
She got a bank to give her $100,000 with no proof of anything.
Oh, somebody got fired. Somebody got so fired.
Oh, and, somebody got fired from the hotel in Morocco because of this whole situation.
Oh, damn. That's rough.
Yeah. That's fucked up.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And, like, the book, like, even if you, like, don't buy the book, which I strongly encourage everyone to do, but you can read, like, the first couple chapters on, like, Google Preview or whatever, it is so batshit crazy. Just, like, and I'm sure poor Rachel is, like, kicking herself over and over of, like, what the fuck happened and, like, how did I not see this? But it's, like, if somebody you're friends with, like, of course, like, like, if it were you, I'd be like, yeah, of course. Like, I got you.
Yeah. Like, you take people at their word.
Right.
And but also, I would never take you to Morocco. I would never ask you to pay for it.
No, if we were going to Morocco, we would, like, plan it together and be like, okay, we're saving for, like, 3 years to go to do this thing. Hence why my wedding, like, save the date sent out, like, a year and a half in advance. But, like, I guess Rachel, or Anna was just, like, so, she's one of those people that is just very charming and, like, knows how to make you feel special and, like, cool and, you know, she's a sociopath.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I am just very, I'm excited for the show.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently Lena Dunham is also working on the show, which I don't care about because I don't like her, but, I hope Rachel gets something.
If it's based on her book, I would imagine she got a real big cut of that sweet, sweet Netflix money.
And the book is really good. She's such a good writer.
Like, damn.
Yeah.
That's wild.
I know.
Yes, I mean, I kind of got to admire her commitment.
Right? It's kind of like, like her.
Yeah, she was, like, really committed to her role.
But it's, like, really fucked up.
It is, it ruined some people's lives.
Don't scam people. Now, yeah. Princess Caribou, I can respect more because it was so long ago.
Yeah.
This is just, like, especially, I guess, as a millennial with a lot of debt and, like knowing how much that, like, puts weight on you, I guess that's where I'm a little more, like,
yeah, and Princess Caribou was, like, scamming rich British aristocrats.
Yeah,
like,
she
was
scamming, like, her friends.
Yeah. So scamming, you know, people who live in, like, a two-bedroom walk-up with four other people.
Right.
That's right. Fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Don't scam poor people.
Don't. I mean, if you're gonna scam someone, scam an old rich white dude.
Yeah, because they got money. They're fine.
Fine.
Two morals of this podcast. Try.
Try.
Don't scam poor people.
Don't scam poor people. Those are our lessons this
week. Yes.
Wow.
We are fans of low bars here at this fucking guy pod.
I mean, really, what else is there?
We've got to keep that bar low.
Got to.
Can't raise it up any.
No. It just is where it is.
Yep.
Have you had any interesting encounters this week?
I did not have any crazy encounters. But what I did have was an encounter with an angel.
Caitlin. I know what you're going to tell me, and I'm going to cry.
I might make Caitlin cry with this one. On Saturday, my husband and I went to a town about an hour south of where we live, called Colorado Springs, to go climb some tall things. So we, on the hike to climb the tall things, we saw a man, his little dog, a little dog, had that tongue just hanging out. And so Kyle, my husband, is like, oh, look, that sweet baby angel. And I was like, I'm going to give that baby some snuggles when I get up there. So we're walking, and we're walking, and we're walking. And this man and his sweet baby little dog are stopped. So as we're approaching, we're getting closer, I notice something is not quite right about this dog. But we get up to him, we start talking to his owner. Kyle says something about, oh my god, your dog's so cute with his tongue hanging out. And the owner says, he doesn't have a bottom jaw. He lost it to cancer. And I'm like, god damn it, that's a baby angel. So he's a little cappy on. He's a sweet goddamn baby angel. He's 12 years old. He doesn't have a bottom jaw because he has bone cancer. And his little tongue just hanging out all the goddamn time. And he was fucking kicking it. He was out there hiking. God damn all of you lazy motherfuckers out there. Dog is 12, has cancer, and no bottom jaw, and is out there getting it. I did not get his name because I was too overwhelmed with feelings. I gave him lots of sweet pat-pats, but I had to do it away because he has a tumor on one side of his face.
No.
About the size of a golf ball. And so his dad was like, yeah, he's really protective about that side of his face, so I had to give him pat-pats on the other side. Oh, but his dad was like, yeah, he just, like, keeps on going. I'm just going to keep on going with him until he doesn't want to go no more.
I love him so much.
I love him.
Also, the fact that he was a papillon with his little ears.
Oh, my God, the best ears. And they were so
fuzzy. I love papillons. The fuzziest ears.
Oh, so fuzzy. And he had little bandanas on because, you know, he drools. Because he doesn't have, because he doesn't have a little jaw. So he had, like, lots of bandanas on. He was an angel. I loved him.
I hope you encounter him again at some point.
Me too. I thought we're going to have to go back to the place.
Oh,
and his dad was just a wanting to talk about him, and I was like, tell me everything?
Yes.
Oh, it was great. He's an angel. And his dad was, like, so fucking in love with him. He's like, yep, yeah, I'm doing everything for him.
That's
all
the
things. And I was like, you're a fucking good dude.
Ugh.
It made my heart happy.
I love that. I have had some interesting encounters because I've been at the hospital visiting my brother, but I don't want to talk about that. But I will talk about the security guard who works there named David, who has been such a, like, orb of light and everything going on. And he has made a point to, like, every time he sees me, he says hi, he knows my name, he knows my brother. He's like, how did today go? How is he doing? How are you doing? How's your family doing? Like, and he does this to everyone. Like, he knows everybody that comes in there and makes the point to, like, talk to you. And then he's like, now, I'm not a religious person, but he's like, I've been praying for you guys in church. I've got you on my list. Like, just, it was really sweet.
That is so beautiful. It was very sweet.
I know. And I was just like, David. And tonight when I left, he was like, I'll see you tomorrow, Miss Caitlin. And I was like,
oh, God damn it. You got me.
That's my boy.
You got me. You got me right in the heart, places.
I know.
Oof, that's good. Oh.
So that was it. That was, like, lovely.
That's just a beautiful ray of light in a very dark place.
Right?
Oh. Ugh. That's so beautiful. Yay.
I know.
That's right. Yay for good people.
And good pups.
Yeah, like good pup-ups. We're just taking it, despite tremendous odds.
Speaking of pup-ups, look at this shit.
Oh, he's a baby.
This is Gigi.
This is a baby.
She's just been farting constantly.
Yeah. Oh, we came back tonight from the climbing gym and Zara shit on the carpet.
No.
Our entire upstairs of our house is either tile or hardwood and shit on the carpet. I was like, that's like, great. That's so great. Like 80% of up here is not carpeted. And the
but I want it.
I have a carpet you shit on.
I want it on shit you. On the soft spot.
Yeah. Because God forbid it's somewhere else. It's like, yeah.
Gigi stepped in her own shit this morning when I took her out. And then wouldn't let me clean the bottom of her feet. And so she's just been walking around with them little poop paws all over the apartment.
Little shit-covered feet just
everywhere. So, and it just smells. And I'm like, whatever.
Yep.
I'll let Nick deal with it. I'm going to Mexico in 2 days.
Fuck it.
Don't care.
Yeah, guys, we'll hit you next week after Caitlin's back from Mexico.
Yes, which next week will be Thanksgiving. So we'll see you at some point after Turkey Day.
Yeah.
We're just going to test out, like, different episode times because we were on the schedule, but, like, whatever.
Life happens.
Until y'all start paying us, like...
Yeah. Life happens.
You get it when you get it, okay?
Yeah. This is a free podcast.
Yeah, you're
welcome. We make it when we make it.
Yeah. Fuck you.
So not really, though, but thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you for listening. And be your own fucking guy.
Be your own fucking guy. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.